My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Colin Jeffries and Eric Reed host a great podcast called the Rethink Marketing Podcast. Colin, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Well, Jason, on the Rethink Marketing Podcast, we unpack the myths, misconceptions, and flat-out lies of marketing and sales. Our listeners tell us that we help bring different perspectives to common business growth, wisdom, and advice.
That's great. Where can people subscribe?
They can subscribe at RethinkMarketingPodcast.com or listen on their favorite podcast platform, including MarketingPodcasts.net.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Ken Unger.
Many athletes go into this thinking that the only brand that they have is the performance brand that they have on the field of play. You know, are they a great soccer player? Are they a great football player? And they feel to a certain extent that their brand is about their series of accomplishments. But that's only part of it. What we share with our athletes is that a brand is the totality of what a person stands for. So it's their values, their sense of humor, their purpose, all those different things that encompass who they are and what they stand for.
Ken Unger is the president of Charge, a national sponsorship consulting firm based in Indianapolis. Since 2006, Charge has served clients including Honda, Acura, NASCAR, the Los Angeles Dodgers, NBA Players Association, American Motorcycle Association, and over 50 professional athletes in the NFL, NASCAR, and IndyCar. Unger is a sponsorship marketing consultant, as well as an attorney with certifications including Player Contract Advisor from the NFL Players Association and Professional Certified Marketer from the American Marketing Association. He has published 2 books on marketing, including his most recent, Sponsorship Strategy, Practical Approaches to Powerful Sponsorships. Unger has worked with marquee brands on sports sponsorships and endorsements, including Bridgestone Firestone, Coca-Cola, Disney, General Motors, Honda, Microsoft, Nissan, Pepsi, Tag Heuer, Toyota, SiriusXM Satellite Radio, and more. Ken, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be here.
You know, I love the focus of your work in general, but your latest book, Sponsorship Strategy, because I feel like those are two words that should go together a whole lot more than maybe they end up actually going together.
You're exactly right. And I found over time that the more that practitioners knew about sponsorship, the better the outcomes. So what I wanted to do was kind of give back to the industry and arm people with as many best practices as possible so they can really leverage sponsorship for their brand goals.
So where do you start? I mean, provided with my coy opening remark, my assumption is that many lack a formal strategy around sponsorship. So where does that sit in relation to other strategies within marketing, or is it an overlay? Well, what's the best way to start thinking about sponsorship strategy?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that sponsorship itself as a marketing platform has a pretty long history. It actually, as I indicated in the book, Sponsorship Strategy, it has its origins back in ancient Greece. So it's a marketing a platform that's got thousands of years of history behind it. And the way that I describe it is it's really about a, you know, at its foundation, it's a co-promotional relationship where the sponsor pays a property for the right to use their name and likeness for the benefit of the sponsor in selling their goods and services. But sponsorship, when it works its best, is truly a mutual relationship. So when you look at platforms like advertising, for example, which is really more or less a one-way transaction, sponsorship is about the sponsor promoting the property and the property promoting the sponsor. So it's this two-way mutual relationship, which really gives sponsorship its power compared to other forms of marketing.
That dynamic is really interesting and as you note, pretty different there. You know, the other thing that I feel like is a part of or certainly impacting that dynamic is, you know, you talked about back to ancient Greece, and maybe this was a challenge then as well in different ways, but this media moment that we find ourselves in, does that, on one hand, it adds greater reach and certainly different platforms when it comes to individual athletes as personal brands. But are there challenges that crop up around that, and how can brands manage that on both sides of the equation?
Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, at its foundation, it really speaks to the fact that sponsorship can be seen sometimes as an umbrella, which is inclusive of many different other forms of marketing. So, for example, while the foundation of it might be about, you know, a sponsor using the name and likeness of a property, in order to complete the sponsorship cycle in terms of how it's promoted, it includes digital marketing, advertising. You might include public relations and a variety of different communications platforms. So they're all bundled under that sponsorship umbrella. Once the sponsorship campaign, you know, finds fruition in the marketplace. Now, with that said, it is dependent on the evolution of all those different platforms. So if you look at the last 10 years and really what's been a digital revolution, but most certainly on the social media side, that has impacted sponsorship. And thus, it's kind of impacted the way that companies can increase brand awareness or increase consideration or preference for their brand, and a variety of other goals as well. But the last 10 years, what I've seen in sponsorship as a result of the evolution of all forms of marketing, especially digital, it's really been incredible in terms of the impact that it has in connecting brands with consumers.
That's fascinating. You talk about connecting brands with consumers. Your work with professional athletes in the NFL, NASCAR, IndyCar, how are the athletes becoming more, because I would say in the beginning of all of this and the 10 years ago side of this thing, it was much more Wild West. Are athletes with their own brands, are they coming to you fully developed? Is there consideration that needs to be given to that as athletes develop their personal brands?
Yeah, you know, that's been a super interesting part of the work that we've done over the last, you know, 15 to 20 years, because personal brands are brands just like the brand of a product or a service. You know, it's a simple, unique, differentiated statement about who someone is and what they stand for. And so from an athlete's perspective, you know, many athletes go into this thinking that the only brand that they have is the performance brand that they have on the field of play. You know, are they a great soccer player? Are they a great football player? And they feel to a certain extent that their brand is about their series of accomplishments. But that's only part of it. What we share with our athletes is that a brand is the totality of what a person stands for. So it's their values, their sense of humor, their purpose, all those different things that encompass who they are and what they stand for. And being a professional athlete is only part of that. So when we're working in terms of the brand development of an athlete, we're really asking them to really expose, the essence of who they are. What are their goals? What do they feel is important? What are their hobbies? What are their interests? Which kind of gives a well-rounded totality of who they are and what they stand for. Once you have that, then you start to promote that brand like you would promote any other brand. Now, with personal brands, there's different platforms that are preferred. For example, we recommend social media and public relations / media relations as kind of preferred ways to promote personal brands. But then when you demonstrate that you're connecting with consumers, now's the opportunity to attract a sponsor through an endorsement relationship. Because really what that sponsor wants is to borrow the audience of the athlete. So the athlete's got to create that audience, and that goes back to having an attractive brand to build that audience, which is why you see some of these professional athletes have millions of followers. That's their audience, and sponsors will pay a lot of money to help access that audience for the benefit of their products and services.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Colin Jeffries and Eric Reed host a great podcast called the Rethink Marketing Podcast. Colin, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Well, Jason, on the Rethink Marketing Podcast, we unpack the myths, misconceptions, and flat-out lies of marketing and sales. Our listeners tell us that we help bring different perspectives to common business growth, wisdom, and advice.
That's great. Where can people subscribe?
They can subscribe at RethinkMarketingPodcast.com or listen on their favorite podcast platform, including MarketingPodcasts.net.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show.
So flipping it back over to the brand side of things, the sponsor side of things, what strategy should be at play for figuring out that we need to connect with this athlete, that event? How can we better connect some of those dots?
Yeah, that's a great question. And where we have kind of, when we advise brands, where we have them start is their audience, their customer demographic. And to really understand in particular, the demography of their customers, but also the psychographic profile of it, their customers' interests and values and hobbies, pastimes, what they buy, what products and services do they use. But to really understand that, because that creates the breadcrumbs of what sponsorship relationships would be of value. Because really, in essence, it's a sponsorship is a matchmaking process where you're looking for your customers' demographics and psychographics in the audience of the property. So, for example, if you were considering sponsoring, say, the Chicago Cubs, my favorite baseball team. So, if you were looking at that, the question is, as a sponsor, do you see your customers in the audience of the Cubs? Or if it's a professional athlete, do you see your customers in the audience of that athlete? And so that is the starting place for any kind of sponsorship relationship. It's that shared target audience. And that's where I see kind of brands, you know, kind of create these unforced errors when there isn't a good match between their customers and the property's audience. That's when you get poor results. And often, like, those brands would end up blaming the sponsorship vehicle as the reason for the poor results. But really, it started off with a mismatch of audience.
So you mentioned unforced errors, and it seems like that's obviously what everyone wants to avoid with sponsorship. What are some of the common traps to avoid with sponsorship?
Yeah, so the first one I mentioned is a mismatch between your customer base and the audience of the sponsorship. That's clearly where we see the most errors occur. Then there's a lack of what we call activation or leverage around the sponsorship. So you find sponsors, either they spend so much money acquiring the rights and paying what's called a rights fee to the property, that they don't have any resources, budget resources, or in the case of their team, you know, human resources to leverage that that sponsorship. So if I have the right of using the logo of your podcast, Nick, and I end up, I don't do anything with it, I sit on those rights and I don't leverage it. And doing leveraging it would be like promoting it on my website and doing an email campaign to your listeners and all those different things, then I have greatly under-optimized that sponsorship by not having enough resource or planning enough resource from a leverage perspective. And then the final mistake that we see, or I should say the major mistake that we see brands make, is not starting with the end in mind and not having a clear sense of the goals that they have. And being able to measure it, right? There's the old adage in business, if it's measurable, it gets done. And so what we find is that a lot of brands go in thinking it's a good job, a good relationship or a good opportunity, but not really with particularity kind of assigning a goal for that, an X percentage increase in brand awareness or an X percentage lift in product sales in the region related to the sponsorship. Whatever that goal is, not having that goal identified at the start of the relationship, that's a major error that we see.
So those being some of the common traps, we've talked about strategy and some of the best practices. Is there in the sponsorship world a shining star example of that's what everyone strives to be in a sponsor relationship?
Yeah, I think that there are lots of examples, Nick, and I think that in terms of things that I like that I've viewed over time in the sponsorship area, probably my favorite goes all the way back to the 2012 Olympics. This is a sponsor that has been an Olympic sponsor for a while, and they have brought back from a perspective the campaigns around their sponsorship that made their Olympic sponsorship so powerful, and that's Procter & Gamble. And what I really appreciated about this and what I really think is a great sponsorship example is in the 2012 Olympics, you know, you have Procter & Gamble, which decided it was going to promote its brand and not necessarily the individual products that they sell. But they connected their audience and their brand with the brand of the Olympics, and in particular, the Olympic athletes. And the campaign that they did around this sponsorship was, you know, and you might remember it, it's called Thank You, Mom. And it was really focused on the sacrifice that mothers make on behalf of their children, male and female athletes who spend, you know, a decade or more preparing for the Olympic Games, and the sacrifice and the love and all of that between mother and child was incredibly heartwarming and really helped connect the Procter & Gamble brand to the brand of the Olympics and Olympic athletes. And so it left the consumer with a clear reason that Procter & Gamble was sponsoring the Olympic Games. And it didn't hurt that many of the P&G products are targeted to the female demographic, many of whom are mothers. And so I love that example of a sponsorship where great sponsorship, great execution, great integrated marketing around advertising and social media and television and all of that to create a message that enhanced the brand of Procter & Gamble, the athletes that they sponsor, and the Olympic Games. Home run.
Well, that's a great example for so many reasons, too, because as you mentioned, especially being P&G, usually their approach has been, you know, to promote the Tide and not P&G. So there's that piece of it that's different, but also that they showed up with something very specific, with a message. And it kind of comes back to that point that you made earlier on leverage, because I think that's such a huge takeaway, especially as we look at bigger sponsorship opportunities, is that if you spend so much on the opportunity itself and leave nothing for leverage, that you need that integrated campaign and messaging. They, like you said, showed up with something to say and something specific to that event and the audience.
Yeah, and it's really authentic, and it was really well designed. I mean, in terms of time and place, they knew exactly where they were, the audience that they were talking to, as well as kind of what made the Olympics tick. I mean, the Olympics really stands for the striving around the world of men and women competing to be the best that they're capable of being. And so that sponsor went in with a clear sense of that and leveraged the stuffings out of it right. in order to achieve what it wanted to achieve.
So we've talked about a lot of the timeless aspects of sponsorship, but to be very timely a little bit more, we're sitting here in 2022, and we have this pandemic endemic thing happening that's disrupting or creating a new normal, or depending on who you talk to. And as we look at events on the horizon, the Super Bowl, the Olympics, it's a different environment. How are sponsors approaching that in this odd time that we find ourselves in?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there are two aspects of it. There's a strategic aspect and a tactical aspect. And the tactical aspect was kind of born out of necessity. So if you go back to 2020, and as events were canceled at the start of the pandemic, there was this massive and almost instantaneous shift to digital because, events were being canceled. We couldn't gather as fans of events, whether they were concerts or sports events. We couldn't gather. So the sponsorship industry made this instantaneous pivot to virtual with the help of properties. And one of the first lessons was it couldn't replace the live experience, but I think digital and social media in particular really was able to flex its muscles to demonstrate the ways that it could connect brands to audiences through the vehicle of sponsorship. So whether it was virtual events that replaced live events, or it was additional added value, added video, added, the gamification of certain things at home, all those different things, tactically, the COVID-19 pandemic really kind of taught the sponsorship industry, the true integrated value of social media. It wasn't that we didn't know it before the pandemic, but we got to really flex its muscle and see how far we can push it. And now it's become, social, for example, where 10 years ago it was seen as a value add, is now an integral part of sponsorship. Strategically, it taught us better how to connect with consumers and that we needed to work harder because in – you know, prior to the pandemic, where you thought maybe an outfield sign at a baseball game or a dasher board logo at a hockey game, you know, would suffice to demonstrate your sponsorship and provide value, that didn't work anymore. And especially didn't work because we saw like in 2020 and to a certain extent 2021, television ratings for sports events tanked. And so in terms of value, you couldn't just be lazy about what you did and rely just on the presence of a sign to demonstrate the value of sponsorship. You had to work on connecting with consumers. And that also made us better. That made us better as an industry. We had to have better creative. We had to have creative that connected with audiences in a more effective way. And so, you know, there's the old adage, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And so as an industry, we had to adapt, and I think we're all better off for it.
Well, that's a great point. And not getting lazy with sponsorship, I hope, is a big takeaway here from this conversation and from our time together. As we start to wrap up, Ken, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, I'll in the interest of full disclosure, it's Acura, and the disclosure part is Acura is a client of ours. Now, I did not have an – our agency had nothing to do with this particular campaign, but as part of Acura's sponsorship of auto racing and motorsports in its quest to demonstrate its performance pedigree, there was a campaign that dropped a few weeks ago called Chiaki's Journey. And it was in anime, in Japanese anime style, told this, it was a coming of age story of a young woman whose father was a race car driver, who she is a race car driver, but it's the story, it's the journey of her overcoming challenges in life and on the racetrack in order to accomplish what she wanted for her life. And it was just brilliant, and it's overall part of Acura's sponsorship of motorsports, and it's was designed to promote the Type S, which is Acura's performance model trim level, and I smile because it was just absolutely brilliant. And I begged them, you know, it's 4 minutes, and I begged them to make a feature length movie of it.
Leave the audience wanting more. I'd say that's they knocked it out of the park. That's a great story and smile. Ken, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, if you want more information about our agency and how we help companies power up their sponsorship, you can go to chargesponsorship.com. And for your audience, Nick, we've put together a series of free resources that are downloadable from our website. So if you go to chargesponsorship.com /free stuff, one word, free stuff, you could get templates and directories and a whole bunch of free resources to help brands and properties make sponsorship work better for them.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to that, including all of the free stuff at onbrandpodcast.com. Ken, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate the opportunity.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Colin Jeffries and Eric Reed host a great podcast called the Rethink Marketing Podcast. Colin, tell us what these fine folks will get out of listening.
Well, Jason, on the Rethink Marketing Podcast, we unpack the myths, misconceptions, and flat-out lies of marketing and sales. Our listeners tell us that we help bring different perspectives to common business growth, wisdom, and advice.
That's great. Where can people subscribe?
They can subscribe at RethinkMarketingPodcast.com or listen on their favorite podcast platform, including MarketingPodcasts.net.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit MarketingPodcasts.net.